at a remote location and logged in, so I'll do my best to stay on top of everything today. Want to take a moment here to thank everybody for being here and the people representing the public who are interested in what we have to do and the good work we do and that are here today as well. Want to start by acknowledging a few of my co-chairs. Karen Fletcher, Chief Probation Officer. Chesa Bodine, District Attorney. James Caldwell, representing Mayor London Breed's office. Manohar Raju, from the Public Defender, And our fifth co-chair, our formerly incarcerated representative, is a vacant position since Jose Bernal has completed his term. We'll be addressing this in our January 2021 council meeting. And before roll is called, I want to welcome our new Board of Supervisors appointed council members, Yolanda Morissette, Jabari Jackson, Michael Brown, and Oscar Salinas. There's a short bio for each of these new members in the public packet on page 9. If we could take this time now, and if you would each like to introduce yourselves, starting with Yolanda.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, good morning, everyone. So honored. My name is Yolanda Morissette. I work for Jail Behavioral Health Services with a program called MAPS, which is Mentor and Peer Support. And we support clients who have mental health issues, drug and alcohol issues. We support them in jail, and we support them as they transition out of jail. I was a case manager for Survivor Restoration Program. I'm a domestic violence advocate. I did a press conference. I'm an advocate for homelessness and did a press conference last September with South to Market with the Mayor, London Breed. And I am a RAMS graduate, a NAMI graduate, and I just finished a drug and alcohol program at City College, and I'm doing internship there now, and I'm just excited to see where this is going to go. I won't let you guys down, and I'm going to do you proud, and I'm excited.
That's great. Thank you, Yolanda. Jabari, would you like to introduce yourself?
Good morning, all. My name is Jabari Jackson, and it's an honor and privilege to be amongst you all. This is an exciting possibility and opportunity all the way across the board. Born and bred here in San Francisco, you know, I represent both sides of the fence. You know, I'm a homegrown product of the services that the city can provide for somebody who's at risk and who's living a negative lifestyle. After release from incarceration, you know, I just followed the steps. I took the steps and the guidance of the mentors that walked the steps before me. I worked hand in hand with the CAS building. I used community resources, and I just solely started to look towards helping the people, to give back to the people. My story could help the next person. Today, I'm happy to say that I have achieved a lot of things by the helps of my guidance and my counselors and my mentors. I'm a city advocate. I'm a community activism. I'm real deep into that. I'm a deacon of my church. I was luckily and honorably nominated to the Wall of Change from the probation department. I am also, I have my certifications in community health work. I have my post-prison health worker certifications, which makes me a reentry counselor. And I'm in the process at the end of the semester having my community health worker certifications. I'm just totally amped, awesome, and psyched to be a part of this. And I'm excited for the opportunity. And I thank you.
Thank you, Jabari. Michael Brown, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello. Michael, sorry, my internet was acting up. I just was able to reboot it. Am I just introducing myself as another entry? Okay, my name is Michael Brown. I currently am the in custody case manager for 5 key schools and programs. And I'm part of the Latino Task Force that that's helping out at the Hub combat COVID-19 in our community.
Thank you so much, Michael. Oscar Salinas, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is Oscar Salinas. I'm 49 years old. I was born and raised in San Francisco Mission District. I was released from custody on May 6th of 2019, and from there, I actually started working closely with CASC. CASC really helped me a lot in different types of services, from employment to fixing my resume to a lot of different services. They helped me get into a program. So I went to the Friendship House. I was at Friendship House for 7.5 months. And then from there, I went into a sober living for 6 to 7.5 months at Serenity House. I'm actively in recovery. Celebrated just recently 17 years sober. And based off of everything that I've been doing, I recently started working for San Francisco Health Plan. I'm a customer service supervisor there. I've been heavily involved in the MRA cash grant here in San Francisco, which we announced a few months ago. So I'm happy to be working with the residents of San Francisco, and just happy to be part of this here too. Especially being from the Mission District, you know, as we all know, that COVID has hit hard on our community there, and I'm really, really motivated and happy and looking forward to working with everybody here. And again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Oscar. Destiny, can you please proceed with the roll?
Please identify yourself. We have a lot of people on Zoom and it's hard to identify people by their screen names. So if you can please help out, that would be appreciated. Do we have a representative from the Public Defender's Office?
Yes, this is, thank you. Hi, Mano. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. This is Mano Raju from the Public Defender's Office. Good to be here. Always excited at, you know, the collaborative efforts that we can generate. And I also wanted to say that, you know, in this time, we at the Public Defender's Office also view ourselves as fundamentally like a public safety office and a reentry organization. And I think to the extent we develop, you know, deep relationships with our clients and we have that bond of trust, that's always an area that we're interested in pushing further in and collaborating. It's good to see everyone on this call.
Thank you. Do we have James Caldwell from the mayor's office? Hearing none, do we have a representative from the district attorney's office? I see Tara on the line.
This is Tara Anderson representing District Attorney Bodine, sends his regrets and not being able to attend today.
And then we have from the U.S. Probation, Tony Castellano on the line.
Yes, good morning. I'm on the line.
Do we have a representative from the Department of Public Health?
Yes, this is Angelica Almeida.
Thank you, Angelica. Do we have a representative from the Superior Court? Seeing none, I will move on. Do we have a somebody from the Board of Supervisors? I don't believe I see Supervisor online. Supervisor Fuhrer?
Present.
Do we have a representative from the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing? From State Parole, we have Aspen Marshall.
Yep, I'm here.
From Juvenile Probation, we have Paula Hernandez.
Yes, I'm present here attending in the absence of Chief Miller.
From Human Services Agency, we have Dan Kelly.
Yes, I'm here in representing Susie Smith.
From the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, do we have a representative? DCYF. Okay. From the Department of Child Support Services, we have Karen Roy. Sharon, are you here? You're unmuted, but you're on mute, but thank you.
Good morning.
And from the police department, do we have a representative?
Commander Peter Walsh for Chief Scott. Thank
you. And from the Office of Economic and Workforce Development?
This is Tawana Graham present. Good morning.
Good morning. And then we are on to our mayoral appointees. Norma Ruiz. Hi, Norma. Malik Wade. Is Malik Wade present? And then we have Shania Branner.
Present.
Thank you. We have quorum.
Okay, great. Sheriff Miyamoto, would you like to proceed with agenda item number 2, please?
Certainly. We can move on to agenda item number 2 and just make sure that we give any member of the public who wishes to speak on any agenda item that is listed as discussion only will have the opportunity to do so. But please note that public comment for discussion and possible action can be given after the presentation of agenda items and also at the end of the agenda. Any members of the public who do wish to comment, please use the Zoom function of raising your hand, which is typically listed under the participants list on Zoom. If this function doesn't work, individuals can type in the chat their desire to speak. And people who have called into the meeting without those features will be asked after each item if they would like to speak. Once called on, please state your name and affiliation, and if you wish, and the agenda item that you wish to speak on. I know that there are many people here, and we want to make sure that we have time to hear from everyone. For that reason, let's make sure that we can self-limit the time for each comment to 1 minute. And Victoria, if you will please time everyone while we're so that we can be fair, so that everyone will be heard, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Do and, we see any public comment, Rex?
I don't see anyone in the chat.
Okay.
No public comment.
Okay, great. We can proceed.
Okay, so I'd like to move on to agenda item 3 then. And ask Victoria, temporary reentry policy planner from the Adult Probation Department, to give council members a staff update on the activities of the reentry council and its subcommittees. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Sheriff. Can we go back to number 3 to adopt the minutes? Can people look at the minutes real quick and see if they are for agenda item number 3?
Yes, that's what happens when I sit at somebody else's desk. Sorry. Let's go to review and adoption of the meeting minutes. Sorry, for January meeting. And if everyone could look at the minutes and review. That's located in public packet beginning on page 10. All right. Are there any comments or questions from council members about the draft minutes? All right, seeing none, is there a motion to adopt the minutes?
A motion to adopt the minutes.
I second that emotion.
All right. Did you get those? Who gave the second? Sorry. Oh, Norma, thank you. Any public comment related to the minutes?
I don't see public comment.
All right, seeing none, I'd like to ask for a vote. Destiny, can you go through the roster to give everyone a chance to vote?
Public Defender Raju.
Sorry, Public Defender Raju had to jump off for a moment. This is Carolyn Goosen from the Public Defender's Office in his place. And we say aye.
Thank you. Chief Karen Fletcher.
Aye.
Tara Anderson.
Aye.
Paul Miyamoto.
Aye.
Tony Castellano.
Aye.
Angelica Alameda.
Aye.
Supervisor Feuer.
Aye.
Aspen Marshall.
Aye.
Paula Hernandez.
Aye.
Dan Kelly.
Aye.
Karen Roy.
Aye.
Tawana Gray.
Aye.
Commander Peter Walsh.
Aye.
Norma.
Yeah. Aye.
Shania Branner.
Aye.
Michael Brown.
Aye.
Yolanda Morissette.
Aye.
Oscar Salinas.
Aye.
And Jabari Jackson.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Great, motion passes. So let's move on to agenda item 4, which is our staff report on activities of the Reentry Council. It's gonna be a discussion only. And also we have agenda item 5, which I referenced earlier, but we'll start with 4. Victoria.
Thank you, Sheriff. So you guys, the regular updates and the staff updates are located in the packet. So starting on pages 23 to 30 for item number 4 and starting on page 31 for item number 5. I'm going to invite Paula Hernandez up to do a verbal update. We weren't able to get her update into the packet. So Paula, would you like to give a verbal update?
Hi, yes, good morning, everyone. I'm Assistant Chief Probation Officer Paula Hernandez, and I'm attending for Chief Miller, who's unable to be with us today. She asked me to please make to update in terms of the JJCC. The JJCC has not met and there is not a meeting that is currently scheduled. However, of note to, I believe, this body is the recent legislation that has passed the governor through the governor's office, SB 823, which is the closure of DJJ and realignment of that population. Some of the big highlights without spending a lot of time on that legislation is that all intake will stop at DJJ for new youth effective July 1st, 2021. DJJ is no longer a dispositional option for youth. To note is that this legislation also creates another office that will manage those youth and their care. It's the Office of Youth and Community Restoration. And this state office will sit underneath the Department of Health and Human Services. It will no longer be managed by the Board of State and Community Corrections. the most important part for this group is the JJCC. Each local JJCC is tasked with coming up with a local plan, and we need to reconvene the JJCC for the members that are mandated to be in that group to develop a local alternative plan for DJJ. This local plan will have to be submitted to the Board of Supervisors for approval by the JJCC, and this plan must be submitted to the new state office by the fiscal year 22-23. So that there's a lot of work to do locally. Probation departments are being surveyed to see if any counties are interested in what kind of local options might be available with current and existing facility space. Chief Miller has been part of those conversations, but I believe there'll be a lot more information coming out of the JJCC as a alternative to DJJ has to be planned. For a point of reference for this body, we currently have 4 San Francisco youth in DJJ. The one other thing Chief asked me to announce is she has appointed a new juvenile hall director. His name is Bobby Upal. His exact start date has not been determined yet, but he is coming from our juvenile placement unit, and he brings with him a wealth and diversity of experience with placement and programming that will be an asset to the operation of the facility. That's all that I have.
Sheriff, we can proceed.
Okay, no comments, no other further comments, Victoria?
No.
All right, we can move on to agenda item 6, which is the reentry counsel appointment to the Sentencing Commission. This will be discussion only and possible action. I believe that as everybody's aware here, our council appoints 2 individuals to the San Francisco Sentencing Commission. Karen Roy, who I see here today, is our official representative on the commission. In addition, the council is tasked with appointing a representative from a nonprofit organization that works with the reentry population. In March of this year, Eric Henderson stepped down from his role as the reentry council appointee to the San Francisco Sentencing Commission, leaving a seat vacant. At the July 23rd meeting, the council voted to allow Jose Bernal to sit in as the interim appointee to the Sentencing Commission during the open application period for the seat. The statement of interest application was posted on the reentry council's website homepage on July 30th of this year. Subsequently, there were 4 emails sent out through the Reentry Council's distribution list through Constant Contact. 8 applications were submitted and are in the public packet on pages 32 through 42. We received 8 applications from people who fit the criteria for the seat on the Sentencing Commission. Has everyone had the chance to review the applicants and the people in the pool right now? And Victoria, you mentioned earlier that somebody had withdrawn earlier.
Yes, correct? So Ronnie Minez has withdrawn his application, so now there's only 7 people. I'm going to call each of them to give a brief presentation of no more than 2 minutes. And then after that, there's going to be a discussion before there's a motion, so that a motion can then be put up for one of these people for the commission. So let's start with Aaron Burris. Aaron, are you on the call?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. The floor is yours.
Hi. I'm Aaron Burris. I'm the business development director for Inside Circle. It's a nonprofit that's been in business in California for about the last 25 years. Prior to being the business development director, I was chairman of the board. Currently, I sit on 2 other boards for nonprofits in an advisory capacity. Since my release from prison 5 years ago, I've steadily stepped into corporate leadership, different roles on staffing, and even boards and advisory boards. I've worked really well with system services delivered at a county and a state level and connecting offenders coming out of reentry to the system. and into system services. I definitely am interested in participating in this committee. I think I bring a wealth of experience. I think I bring a lot of lived experience and familiarity with the adversity that a lot of people face when they're released. And I also mentor probably right now about 25 to 30 ex-life term inmates in the Bay Area and connecting them into basically life recovery one-on-one. I've used my support network to support them. I also run three projects right now, one in New Jersey, one in Illinois, and one in Georgia. Keep the community, the offender in the community model in Georgia, and I'm working with juvenile institutions in New Jersey and Illinois to deliver peer-to-peer mentorship, credible messenger circles. So I've definitely got some organizational experience around engaging with the system on both logistics and also on developing the relationship with community providers. I think I can bring a wealth of experience, and I think I'm a very fair individual, and I'm also very hopeful. I think that we can pretty much do anything we put our mind to. And with that, I'm in.
Thank you so much, Aaron. Is Aaron Lowers here on the call? Aaron Lowers. Okay. Enos Johnson. Enos Johnson. Michael Brown, you have the floor.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Michael Brown. I'm an in-custody case manager with Five Keys in collaboration with Roadmap to Peace. I primarily work with transitional aged youth, providing court advocacy, creating, setting up, and executing reentry plans. I'm part of the Mission Peace Collaborative and a member of the Latino Task Force on COVID-19 and a part of their Violence Prevention Reentry Committee. I'm a San Francisco native, born and raised in the Mission, and a product of San Francisco's public school system, as well as their jail system. I'm a San Francisco State 2020 graduate and now have a bachelor's degree in political science. Shout out to Project Rebound if you guys are on the call. The next step is law school. I am a father of three beautiful brown babies. I became a father at age 17. I have experience with the family and dependency court system who have an extreme bias that favors mothers. But I'm not here to talk about the family court system. I'm here because of our criminal justice system. While I was in custody at YGC for a false accusation, I was treated extremely poorly. Because of a medical condition, I refused a TB shot. Because of my refusal, they locked me up in isolation, refused to feed me, and let me contact my parents while calling me all sorts of names for their amusement. I have been a victim of street violence as well as police violence. I have lost countless friends as well as my own uncle to senseless violence. One of my client's cases haunts me to this day. At age 13, he was overcharged and oversentenced. On his 18th birthday, he got on a bus and went from juvenile hall to adult county jail. 7 years later, he was on a bus to state prison. This young man lost his entire childhood with no chance. This sentence was way too harsh for anybody, let alone some 13-year-old kid. I want to serve on this committee to prevent the system from swallowing up our community and family members. I really want this seat on the sentencing committee to help bring that young leadership voice and help shape or reform the current sentencing laws. Thank you all for your time.
Victoria, if you want to unmute.
Is that Oscar? Okay, Stephanie Gray.
Hello.
Oh, Oscar, there you are. Okay, go ahead, please.
Good morning. My name is Oscar Pena. My parents have migrated from Nicaragua, Managua, to the U.S., so I'm the first generation born here in San Francisco. Also, I'm a informally incarcerated person, have been able to turn my life around. I have had the opportunity to serve as a senator for 2 years and served as a student body president for 2 years at City College of San Francisco at the main campus, Ocean. I understand the use of Robert rules and bring my experience of sitting on a council. For 9 years, I have volunteered at 8 different institutions: San Quentin, Solano State Prison, CMF, Soledad, Susanville State Prison, Youth Authority, San Francisco County Jail, and San Francisco Juvenile Hall. I was able to facilitate Muslim religious services and mentoring and leadership services in these 8 different institutions. I am a senior case manager for the Reset Justice Collaborative located at Hunters Point Family. I serve our youth population that is the ages of 14 to 24, and I provide resources, referrals, mentor, and court advocacy to these youth. I have 3 AS degrees from City College of San Francisco, a bachelor's degree, and currently completing my master's degree at San Francisco State University. I would like to bring the voice that to this committee as it is, as needed of being diverse and cohesive in order to bring the proper collaboration and networking to make sure that our people are receiving the proper services in San Francisco. So again, I bring much diversity and wealth of experience to this opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Oscar. Stephanie Gray, are you on the call?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Stephanie Gray. Has been now and now.
Stephanie, you're cutting in and out.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, no, we can't.
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. moved to San Francisco like 8 years ago. So I worked with the person who.
I can't hear anything she's saying.
Yeah. Stephanie, can you call into the meeting?
Okay, I'll do that.
Do you have the phone number?
You can't hear me?
Now we can, but you keep going in and out. Do you want to try again?
Going in it, okay.
Oh, let's try that. You sound better now.
Okay, are you sure?
Yes, please.
Okay, okay. Okay, great. I'm working with non-binary trans women and men, and non-binary folks, the TNGNC population. I work for Safe House. I work for a woman's place in the community. I also work for Safe.
Okay, I'm sorry. We can't hear you again. So
I work with okay. How about if I just call in? You can go to someone else and I'll just call in.
Okay, that works. Thank you. William Palmer, can you speak now?
Yes, thanks, Victoria, and it's an honor to be here. My name is William Palmer, and why my identity is the perfect fit. Black men like me are disproportionately impacted by the criminal justice system. America is uprising in anger, and we need to restore credibility, if not give credibility, to the criminal justice system. We need Black men to be making decisions about the fate of other Black men. And why my work experience and background makes me a perfect fit. The Sentencing Commission has a greater need than just fulfilling this seat with an activist. We need someone with the heart of an advocate and experience and skills working within the structure that we seek to correct, not just someone who criticizes the structure. I have channeled my passion into working with many advocacy groups, including United Players by Saving the Hood, Inside Gardening Program by being an environmentalist, Defy Ventures by making business partnerships, and All of Us Are None, organizing and legislative work like Proposition 17. And I'm a core member of Abolish Slavery National Network that's working with other states to repeal and replace the exception clause to end slavery and involuntary servitude once and for all in this country. But I also have significant experience working inside the criminal justice system with people like San Francisco Chief of Police Bill Scott. When my first day out of prison, I helped navigate the conversation between the youth and the police department. And with Sheriff Miyamoto, with closing down the jail, we have a good working relationship. If I am selected for this position, I would bring the critical perspective of a formerly incarcerated Black man who suffered constitutionally excessive punishment and extra sentencing of over two decades, and who can translate my community advocacy work into a specific measure that can be instated and to bring greater justice to people of greater credibility and greater credibility to San Francisco criminal justice system. I will be with oral arguments this November 3rd before the California Superior Court to make sure that other youth offenders will not have to serve 31 years and 22 days of incarceration. And I look forward to working hand in hand with everybody on this call. Thank you.
Thank you, William. Has Stephanie joined us again yet? Okay, while we're waiting for Stephanie to call in, there were a few more support letters for Michael Brown that came in after the packet was sent out. Johanna Bermudez Hernandez sent an email. She says, I'm writing to endorse Michael Brown for the Sentencing Commission. I have worked with Michael closely in serving in the community population, in the in-custody population, and working with the Roadmap to Peace program. Michael is dedicated and passionate about the work, his professional and lived experience, as well as his understanding of the criminal justice will bring great value to the Sentencing Commission. Michael is the product of community programs. There was from Ronnie Munoz, he says, as the executive director of faith-based nonprofit Save the Grace, I would like to nominate Michael Brown. I have worked side by side with this young compassionate community worker in the San Francisco jails and know him and his story well. He brings a new and young intellect to what this time and age need and has the backing of my organization and many others to support him. He would be a good fit for the seat and has a lot to offer to the council. And from Natalia Argiello, my name is Natalia Argiello. I am a community health outreach worker at Burton High School, located in San Francisco's Bayview Visitation Valley districts. I'm also a born and raised San Francisco community member. I am emailing to voice my strong support for Mike Brown for a seat on the SF Sentencing Commission. I am both personally and professionally acquainted with him and have witnessed firsthand the impact he has on our community. He connects with youth on a very real and genuine level, while also maintaining his clear, thorough, and intimate understanding of systems of incarceration that our youth interact with. His unique skill set, community connections, and dedication to our community is unmatched. I think of no other community professional better than Mike to fill a role like this. And then finally, Tracy Brown, the Mission Peace Collaborative co-chair, sent this. My name is Tracy Brown, and I have been an advocate for violence prevention for over 30 years. My son is before your committee today. I would like for you to consider him to be appointed to the Sentencing Commission. My son was raised in the Mission during a high peak violence and was caught up in the system. He has worked hard to overcome the obstacles that he faced as a young Latino man. The systemic inequities have been glaring before us during COVID-19. It is now being addressed, and it is time for the younger generation to make these changes. My son attended the low-performing schools that were identified, but he also was able to attend many community programs and work in many of them. These were great opportunities. In particular, he worked with youth identified by SFPD as gang involved. Coming from the Mission neighborhood, he has had many family members and friends who were lost to violence. In particular, his own uncle was killed blocks from the house. Growing up in our neighborhood and seeing his peers lost to the system has impacted him. His own experience with the system has taught him about how important advocacy is. In his current position, he has seen many injustices and unfair sentencing of children based on not having family members present to advocate for them. This has impacted him, and he is passionate and committed to helping address the system inequities. As my son, he has grown up giving back to the community and has a deep understanding about the system, poverty, and cycles and generations of trauma. He has survived this cycle and is working to help others be their best. Thank you for your consideration. Stephanie, are you on the call now? Okay.
Can't,
Can I suggest something? Maybe somebody can read the packet that she put in where her little description, but if she doesn't come back.
I mean, everybody's had the packet to review before she came, before Hi. Today. That's Stephanie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. The floor is yours.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Gray. I'm an African-American transsexual post-op woman who experienced being in and out of jail and being in prison and being harmed physically and mentally by people who were supposed to be guarding us in prison. And I've been discriminated upon in and out. I work with people who've experienced similar trauma with non-binary, with the TGNC community, who's been underserved. I work now with Safe House, Community 4 SF, which is formerly a woman's place. I've worked and I also work at St. James Infirmary. I formerly worked with Asian Pacific Islander Wellness Center. I am a reentry case manager as well as a housing case manager. And I'm also a residential counselor. I work with undeserved population who've been hurt and harmed by societal views and perceptions of what is normal. I'm here to just say that I'm here to really just show the impact or tell the impact of what I've experienced and what a lot of us have experienced and not being given the right and to be just to live. I mean, just to have a normal life, to be authentic self. I want to be able to help those who are deserved. I worked also with all populations and basically and all races as well, not just only the TGNC community. That's it.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. Okay, Council. So,
Victoria, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to mention that Rudy Corpus from United Players had actually called to advocate on behalf of William Palmer. Not only his dedication to the organization, the work he does in the community, the experiences he brings in life to the table, that Rudy felt that William's balanced approach to reform would be an excellent addition to the Reentry Council or to the Sentencing Commission. Sorry, I meant to forward you the message earlier. So just wanted to say that.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, council members, now how this is going to work, you're going to discuss amongst yourselves, and when you feel that there is some consensus, then a motion will be made to appoint somebody, and then the votes will happen like that. Okay? Go ahead, Sheriff.
Thanks, Victoria. And before we even begin the discussion, I want to personally thank everybody who's applied, those present here, Aaron and Mike and Oscar, Stephanie, William, thank you for taking the time and showing the commitment and the passion that all of you bring to the table here. And it really is gratifying to see that, but it also means that it's very challenging for all of us as council members to make that type of decision. So I just wanted to make sure all of you know that you're appreciated in your commitment and your interest. And it was just wonderful to hear from all of you as we move forward now and start our discussion on how to proceed. And I open this up now to council members to share with all of us perspectives.
I guess I'll go first. I think that there is it's going to be hard. They all bring a wealth of experience, personal experience, professional experience, community experience, life experience. And I think that we need a diverse commission. I think to me, having a trans woman on the board, I think would be essential to elevate that voice, to uplift trans women
I would definitely love to have Stephanie on the board after hearing her. I also, William Palmer also speaks to me, and Oscar actually went to City College with Oscar. He was, I was there when he was running his campaign, when he wanted to go on the board of City College, and he did an awesome, amazing job. Yeah, this is really hard. I don't know what you guys think.
I agree, Norma. Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Hi, this is Tawana Gray, representing Office of Economic and Workforce Development. As Norma just mentioned, everyone had real good experience. I mean, I think in of themselves would be good representatives. I definitely also want to make the case for William, just thinking about this quote that the people closest to the problem should be part of the solution in terms of the criminal justice system and its impact and disparities on Black men, specifically in Black people. Over history, currently, I think we need someone who's there to be a representative, to bring light to what that experience is and to bring solutions about how it would help Black people, like I said, who end up being the people most impacted, Black and Brown people, most impacted by the criminal justice system. So I definitely think William, he has a depth of experience. He's been in the community. He knows the dynamics. He would be, I think, a great representative for the Sentencing Council. So thank you.
Thanks, Tawana. Others? Just go ahead and speak up, whoever wishes to share perspective. I'm trying to look at everyone's panel here. It's kind of challenging.
I think we have Tara Anderson.
Tara Anderson has her hand up.
Thank you, Destiny, Victoria, and Sheriff. I really appreciate everything that has been shared, everyone's time, and the speeches, just so moved and motivated to create more seats and more opportunities to ensure that voices are at these decision-making tables. And I think that the challenge of the decision is that there's no wrong decision ultimately when you have such a panel of exceptional candidates. So just really appreciating that. And given that the sentencing commission falls under the kind of administrative support of the district attorney's office, just wanting to, whatever, regardless of what today's outcome is, really hoping that everyone stay involved and participate in those meetings. There's several subgroups, and please don't, whatever today's outcome is, that no one should be discouraged, that absolutely continuing to be involved. They're all public meetings, and we want your voices there. But ultimately, we still need to make a decision. And I have to say, I was particularly motivated and moved by the comments of Michael Brown, and really connecting all aspects of the work and clear knowledge about the priorities and focus of the Sentencing Commission and its responsibilities, both in the context kind of local decision making, but also ultimately trying to shift changes in law. So again, an incredibly difficult decision. And I really do hope that we can continue to regardless of today's outcome, I want to be sure that everyone is involved and included in the work of the Sentencing Commission. So thank you.
Carolyn Goosen would like to speak.
Hi, thank you so much. On behalf of Public Defender Raju, who unfortunately has had to step away due to an urgent matter, but I just wanted to, on behalf of our office, thank everyone as well for the beautiful speeches, for their preparation. You know, it's a very difficult choice, and I wish there was an opportunity, as Tara said, for everyone to participate as a representative. You know, I've had an opportunity to work with many of the folks who sent in recommendation letters for Michael Brown and have worked and really respect and are impressed by the amount of preparation that went into all of that and also that understanding of all the systems and the connections there. But we've also had a wonderful experience working with William Palmer, and appreciate the work he's done on a lot of the systems issues as well. So this is a very difficult choice. I do think we want to see everyone to continue to be involved in any way possible. And so just thank you all for sharing and being both vulnerable and strong in your voices and being willing to take the time to participate.
Sheriff, I don't see any more hands up.
Okay, thank you, Victoria. I'd like to echo both what just the most recent Carolyn and Tara, actually everybody, you know, is sharing. and I'm coming to the conclusion this is going to be a very difficult decision. And I know that everyone's perspective is welcome. But as we move forward now, we are going to have to make a decision here. And I just want to say I share the same challenges here because I've worked with people and I have people that I'm familiar with, people I'm not so much familiar with, and my own decision making is challenged by the fact that everybody shares an underlying passion and commitment to all of this and would do well. It's to be expected that there are other opportunities moving forward. I just want to put out, I'm also in process of forming an oversight and advisory committee to be made up of members such as yourselves. And don't be surprised if I reach out to all of you for my office moving forward. It's not meant to be a consolation prize. It's meant to be something as a part of our overall processes to make change and make sure we have everyone's perspective and input to make sure we make the right change. So I just wanted to put that out there too. And at this time, for the council, do I have any, can I hear a motion for an appointment of a representative to the Sentencing Commission?
Sheriff, I too echo your sentiments and the sentiments of the other co-chairs and members of the Reentry Council. It is a very challenging decision because each of the individuals who have submitted interest for this position and have been supported by others in the community for the position is greatly respected, and each of you bring something very unique to the table. I feel at this point I would like to nominate Mr. Palmer based on the length of time that he spent in custody, his experience, his connection to the community. When he got out from his statement, he immediately got involved with Chief Scott, and that is very much respected. And again, a very difficult decision, and I would love to expand the seats, as has been mentioned before, because each and every person would bring to the table just a wealth of information and knowledge from their experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Fletcher. Is there a second?
I will second that. This is Tawana Gray.
Thank you, Tawana.
Thank
you. So we have a motion. You want to read back that? Well, I believe it's a motion to appoint William Palmer to the Sentencing Commission to represent the Reentry Council. Nonprofit, and there's second. Victoria, do we proceed with a vote at this time? Or do I open it up right now for public comment and everything?
Right, ask if there's any public comment.
So at this time, I'd like to ask to see if there's any members of the public who wish to comment on this agenda item and motion. Make sure you, a reminder to use your Zoom function, raise your hand, or make sure you indicate that you have a wish to speak.
Rebecca Jackson from Cameo House put in the chat, it is so very important that Black people are at the table, especially since that is the population most affected by sentencing issues. Joanna Hernandez would like to speak.
Hello. I just think that my name is Joanna Hernandez. I'm a parent of someone who's currently incarcerated inside San Francisco County jails. I think that it's very imperative to have young representation, people who have been most recently affected by what's happening in our criminal justice system. And I hope that this commission looks to opening up more doors to more younger leaders to join this council. As a former member of the Sentencing Commission, I also felt that there was more senior bodies involved in the process. And I think that having more of a young generation joining this commission would be very beneficial. So I hope that this, you know, commission looks into doing that. And even at some point, looking into having more younger people to having a sentencing commission, especially with the process of trying to close juvenile hall down.
Thank you, Ms. Hernandez. Jeffrey and Morris, would you speak? Can you speak now?
Yeah, I would like to just say that 31 years incarcerated is, to me, the best person to be on the Sentencing Commission for harsh treatment and about how to correct the system. Who better than someone that was formerly a lifer? So that is my opinion.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Rebecca Jackson wanted to speak.
Yes, thank you. I know I put a comment in the chat. Rebecca Jackson with CJCJ. I just think that it's really important, and forgive me for not knowing how diverse the sentencing commission already is, because I'm not sure about that. I just think that especially with the temperature of our society and how important it is that, you know, we have Black people at the table to bring that voice, because if we look at the people who are in prison and who are negatively affected, it's that population that is overwhelmingly disparaged. And so I just think it is really, really important, and it's the right time, you know, to have more Black people at the table with that voice, that experience to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Seeing no more public comment, I'll pass it back to you, Sheriff Miyamoto.
Okay, I'd like to ask for a vote then at this time. And Destiny, can you go through the roster to give each member the opportunity to vote?
Destiny?
Sorry about that. From the Public Defender's Office, Carolyn Goosen.
Aye.
Chief Karen Fletcher.
Aye.
Terry Anderson.
Aye.
Sheriff Miyamoto.
Aye.
Tony Castellano.
Aye.
Angelica Alameda.
Aye.
Supervisor Feuer.
Aye.
Aspen Marshall.
Aye.
Paula Hernandez.
Aye.
Dan Kelly.
Aye.
Karen Roy.
Aye.
Tawana Gray.
Aye.
Commander Walsh.
Aye.
Norma Ruiz?
Aye.
Shania Branner?
Aye. Aye.
Michael Brown? Is this an abstention? This might be. I don't. Victoria, you can.
Michael, did you want to vote?
Yeah.
You say aye.
Oh, so I'm sorry. We're voting on the seat, right?
Yes.
Okay. Nay.
Okay.
Yolanda Morissette? Not seeing Yolanda. Oscar Salinas?
Oh, I said aye. Sorry. Aye.
Oscar?
Aye.
And Jabari Jackson?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Great.
Okay, thank you. And again, thank you to everybody who showed the interest and the time and the commitment to the work that we're doing here. We can move. I'm sorry, what was that?
I wanted to say something for the public comment, but I guess I couldn't get in. Can I say a quick words on William?
It's already passed. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thank
congratulations,
you.
William.
Thanks, Oscar.
Thank you, Oscar. Okay, let's move on to agenda item 7, which is funding the direct services subcommittee. This is going to be discussion only. And I believe at the last reentry council meeting, we voted to permit changes to the direct services subcommittee. One of those changes was to provide funding in the form of stipends for the formerly incarcerated co-chairs and other incentives to formerly incarcerated members. A budget was submitted to Supervisor Fuhrer's office August 17th of this year for consideration. And if you all look to your packets on page 43, there's a copy of that for you. And Victoria, go ahead and speak to it.
Thank you, Sheriff. So the budget was submitted and it didn't get processed. So we're going to be reaching out next week to the city departments to see if there's a way that the city departments can each contribute like $462 to like work order to fund this. But I'll be reaching out next week on this matter. Okay, thank you so much. We can go on to the next.
Okay, so we can move on to agenda item 8.
Okay. Yes, sir.
All right, and that's going to be the San Francisco Recovery Summit working group presentation. I believe that in 2018, the Reentry Division of the Adult Probation Department, in partnership with the Senior Ex Offender Program and Citywide Case Management, launched the city's first ever recovery summit. You can see that on your screen now. Our presentation is about to begin. The purpose of the summit is to celebrate the success of individuals in recovery, to discuss addiction realities and recovery solutions, and be a source of inspiration for change. Immediately following the 2018 summit, a working group of people in recovery convened to discuss addiction and recovery challenges in San Francisco.
I like need it.
And to identify recommendations to improve treatment and addiction outcomes. Today, as a first step, the group will be presenting the summary data from a survey conducted last year, as well as their recovery and treatment recommendations. Please welcome at this time, Steve Adami, the Interim Director of the Reentry Division of Adult Probation. Steve.
Thank you, Sheriff Miyamoto. My name is Steve Adami, and I am the Acting Director of the Reentry Division of the Adult Probation Department. But more importantly, after spending 20 years addicted to drugs, breaking the law, and in and out of jail and prison, I got an amazing gift. I got clean and sober. Today, I'm here with a group of colleagues who are in recovery to present efforts of the San Francisco Recovery Summit Working Group, which we believe will improve San Francisco's response to addiction and treatment. For those of you who live in the city, you do not need a PhD to realize drugs are a problem in this city. Before I begin, I want to recognize addiction. It's a difficult conversation to have, but it's one that's long overdue. Right now, there's thousands of people in San Francisco suffering from addiction that don't have a viable path out. That alone is the tragedy. Over the past 10 to 15 years, policymakers have not included the voices of those in recovery when making policy decisions about addiction and treatment. Today, we're hoping to change that. We believe that those who were once the problem actually have become the solution. Today, we're asking the Reentry Council to formally support our recommendations to the city. Before I start, I want to note, we are not asking the city to stop any of its current efforts. What we are asking is that recovery can coexist within the city's current response. Next slide. Thank you, Destiny. So before I start, I just want to kind of talk about the gravity of the problem in San Francisco. So between 2014 and 2017, this is post Prop 47, there was 49,000 booking incidents or events in the San Francisco County Jail. 84.5% of those were for people that had a self-identified history of substance use. We distribute 4.5 million syringes annually. There's 24,500 IV drug users. Overdose deaths have nearly doubled, and this year we're on pace for over 700. In 2019, there was 2,610 overdose reversals. According to Christian Marshall of the Dope Project, that's actually probably only about 30% of the actual OD reversals. I want to commend my colleagues from the Treatment on Demand Coalition who are on the call today because they actually won. Between February of 2020 and October of 2020, there's an average of 44 open treatment beds a day funded by San Francisco's Department of Public Health. On the Find Treatment SF website, there's three categories of treatment: detox, short-term stays, and residential step down. Short-term stays is what we've been tracking for the last 8 months. Next slide. So in January of 2018, my colleague Jeffrey Amores, she got tired of hearing me complain about the state of affairs in San Francisco. So she came up with this amazing idea to launch a recovery summit where we could actually have a public forum to talk about the realities of addiction in San Francisco. So we reached out to community partners and people in recovery, and we formed a working group. And in June of 2018, we launched our first ever San Francisco Recovery Summit. Each year, we honor several people in recovery, most notably Cedric Akbar and Craig Johnson, who have received the Recovery Summit's Lifetime Achievement Award for their commitment to recovery, the community, and helping others. For anybody who knows Craig or Cedric, these two people live and breathe recovery. Next slide. So immediately after the 2018 summit, we launched a call to action to expand the working group. You can see some of the members in the word cloud at the top of the screen. And what we did was we developed a platform of concepts we thought would have the greatest impact on addiction in San Francisco's recovery effort. So first, we came to the conclusion that San Francisco needed to expand treatment options. Right now, it's one size fits all. People don't get clean and sober the same way. And we felt it should be expanded from safe consumption sites to hardcore abstinence-based treatment, faith-based treatment, 12-step programs. People should be able to access the treatment they need. Second, we felt they should extend treatment stays. The length of time somebody spends in residential treatment should not be based on Medi-Cal funding. It should be based on the treatment needs of the person. Third, we felt the city should create specialized treatment programs for young adults. Young people have different needs than adults and are at different stages of development. Fourth, we felt we should expand paid peer special opportunities for people exiting treatment. And last, we felt we really needed to increase awareness about available drug treatment services in San Francisco. So to kind of inform our recommendations, we launched a survey in August of 2019, and I'm going to report on some of the summary data right now. Next slide. So we launched two surveys, one for current or former drug users, and two for family members or loved ones impacted by drug use. So like my mom, who is actually on this call, would have answered the second survey. You know, we often hear that drugs are a victimless crime, and I think we can all agree that people who use drugs as a response to some type of pain and trauma, but there are others who are affected my people's addiction, and my family can contest to that. We administered the survey on two mediums. First, there was an online platform, and second, there was a paper-based survey. Paper-based survey was in three different languages. Today, due to time constraints, we're going to talk about the survey for current or former drug users. There was 422 respondents, 144 people responded online, and 278 responded in the paper-based survey. Next slide. No surprises to the demographics. There is one thing we're a little disappointed about, and that there was an underrepresentation of women, but we do recognize that they have special needs and that they are the largest growing population in the justice system. Next slide. So top graph, normal suspects, respondents drug of choice. Interesting enough on this one, alcohol, cocaine, and meth were the three top, and pain meds and fentanyl were the bottom two. And I think that fentanyl at the time hadn't made, it was last year. At the time, I don't think people were using it solely in isolation. It was mixed with other drugs. Bottom graph is the age respondents started struggling with drugs. So 81% of respondents began struggling with drugs before the age of 24, and 44% between the ages of 13 and 18. Next slide. Top graph, 69% of respondents had struggled with drugs for 10 or plus years. Interesting that 35% of respondents had struggled with drugs for over 20 years. The longest period of sobriety for respondents, 37% of respondents have been clean and sober for at least 5 years. Next slide. This is an interesting one. I'm going to start at the top left and I'm going to go clockwise. So 30% of respondents had used some form of harm reduction strategy to help them. So there's 126 respondents who had used some form of harm reduction. There was a follow-up question that said, if you used harm reduction, what was the most useful practice? There were 72 responses. 36 noted some form of medically assisted treatment. But the odd part was, is we asked for what was the most useful practice. There were some responses, I think two notably, that said, people said, I went into county jail, addicted to methamphetamine, and left on Suboxone. So I reached out to case managers at our reentry center, and there was a couple case managers that worked for UCSF that actually had the same experience with their clients. So I thought it was interesting and something that we should follow up on at some point. The top right graph, 73% of respondents have been to residential treatment. On the bottom, you can see 64% of respondents have completed 6 months or more of residential treatment, which is interesting, right? Medi-Cal pays for 30 days of treatment with two 30 days extension. And then the bottom right graph, about half the respondents have been to outpatient at some point. Next slide. So this is another interesting question. The types of residential treatment programs respondents had attended. There were several answers. These are the top five. People can also write in their answer. But the interesting part is 12-step programs were 12-step programs, social model, therapeutic communities, and behavioral modification were the top three. The city doesn't even fund these. The city does not fund faith-based programs. And then there's a large portion of people that attended treatment in custody. So it is notable that the programs people went to that got clean, we don't fund. Interesting. Bottom graph, respondents' residential treatment stays. 27% of respondents have been to treatment five or more times. I thought that was kind of interesting, but national data states that people with five or plus years of continuous recovery have made on average five recovery attempts. Next slide. The top word cloud, treatment service most helpful to respondents. You know, almost half the respondents stated it was residential treatment. And then it dropped from 50% to 14%, which was 12-step meetings, and then 10% the criminal justice system. So this was an open-ended question. We had to go through and code things. So some of the responses in the criminal justice system was, I went to in-custody treatment. I had a great parole officer. I got arrested and I got clean in county jail. So there's a whole gamut of responses that were kind of categorized into that. The bottom graph is where we start our Likert scale questions, which kind of provide a holistic view of respondents' opinions of our core recommendations. So I'm going to read the entire question. The question said, there's a need for more drug and alcohol treatment options in San Francisco, ranging from abstinence-based, social model, faith-based treatment programs, harm reduction programs, safe injection sites, mental health programs. It's kind of overwhelming that 74% of the people either strongly agreed or agreed, with 60% strongly agreeing, where only 11% either strongly disagreed or strongly disagreed. Next slide. There's a need for longer residential treatment programs ranging from 90 days to 1 year and longer based on the individual treatment needs. Again, overwhelmingly, 69% of people either agreed or strongly agreed, 15% disagreed or strongly disagreed. Bottom graph, there's a need for specialized residential and outpatient treatment programs for youth and young people ages 16 to 25. Again, 76% of people either agreed or strongly agreed, 9% disagreed or strongly disagreed. Top graph, there is a need to expand paid peer specialist opportunities to train and connect people in recovery with those working toward recovery. Again, 75% of the people either agreed or strongly agreed. And then the bottom, there is a need to increase education and information about available drug treatment services in San Francisco. This one is really overwhelming, which was 79%, which is interesting. In February, there was a no overdose campaign, which I think we all can agree that we need to save lives. You can't get people clean if you don't save lives. But the messages on the billboards were alarming. And I want to commend Supervisor Stephanie and Supervisor Walton, who kind of spoke out about the disproportionality of people of color in the billboards. Next slide. So this isn't one of our formal recommendations yet. But I did want to mention something that we did here at probation that's definitely impacted our recovery efforts. About 2 years ago, we fund directly 50 residential treatment beds, and we fund treatment for 6 month stays. We had a hard time getting people to go to treatment, and we have around 300 units of housing. So our division came up with this concept like, hey, we should incentivize treatment. We know people are struggling with drugs. People would continuously tell us that, hey, I don't want to go to treatment because I get out and I have nowhere to go when I get out. So what we did is we committed to our clients, if you can complete 90 days of residential treatment, you can get up to 2 years of free transitional housing with us. Since that day, our housing programs are packed with people headed in the right direction in their lives, and all of our treatment beds are full. Before we get to the next slide is our formal recommendations that we're asking the council to approve and support. I didn't write all these. These were a collective. I'm going to read them. And I say that before I get there because there's a couple that pertain especially to people that are Black. And I am just messaging this. You're going to hear from the group after my presentation directly. Next slide. Okay. First recommendation. San Francisco needs to expand drug and alcohol treatment options, include residential abstinence-based treatment programs, social model therapeutic communities, faith-based and 12-step treatment programs, harm reduction strategies, and safe consumption sites. Number two, extend drug and alcohol treatment stays. Treatment should not be bound by drug Medi-Cal. San Franciscans should have access to drug and alcohol treatment programs ranging from 90 days to a year or more based on the needs of the person. Third, fund a Black-led abstinence-based treatment program in the Bayview to meet the culturally sensitive treatment needs of Black people and people of color who live in the Bayview, provide treatment which is abstinence-based in its approach to working with addicted and justice populations in San Francisco. Fourth, specialized drug treatment programs for transitional age young adults. Young people have different needs than adults. Drug treatment should be specialized to meet the needs of those ages 16 to 25. Next, include the voice of people in recovery. Ensure individuals in recovery are at the table when the city is making policy decisions regarding addiction, recovery, and treatment. Expand paid peer specialist opportunities. Train and connect those in recovery with people working toward recovery. People who successfully complete treatment should have access to paid positions helping others struggling with addiction. And last, increase awareness about available drug treatment services. Ensure individuals suffering from addiction can access real-time information about treatment options. Before we move on, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Rexanne Becerra, who will call on members of the Recovery Summit Working Group to kind of share their experience. I've been involved in the Reentry Council for 6 years. I've never seen 90 people at a meeting, so I just want to say thank you, everyone, for your support. And I'm going to turn the meeting over to Rexanne.
Thank you, Steve. I'd like to call on Jafria Morris.
Adrian.
Okay. Hello, Reentry Council members, and welcome to all the new Reentry Council members. I come to you all today not as a colleague, but as a daughter of an addict and a felon. From the age of 13 to 44, my father cycled in and out of the criminal justice system, starting with stints in Juvenile Hall, to Log Cabin Ranch, to A50 Bryant, to then Susanville State Penitentiary. Not having a true relationship with my father until the age of 13, our rekindled bond was quickly shaken by his increased drug use. We went through this cycle for 11 years. I watched my father being kicked out of Jelani House, Liberty House, Friendship House, Salvation Army, and so many others. However, what I did not know was that these short stints of sobriety was making my father stronger. During these very rough times, our faith in God and my father's ability to find peer-based recovery programs was his and our family's saving grace. I truly believe if my father was trying to get clean today, he could not, because the number of treatment modalities that was available to him in the 90s and 2000s no longer exist. Today, my father is a strong Black man who has been clean and sober for 16 years. He is a longshoreman, a religious man, a homeowner, a grandfather, and a sponsor of so many individuals currently in recovery. It is important to know that he did not experience complete sobriety until 44 years of age. This is the age range in which Black men are disproportionately overdosing in our streets now. San Francisco overdose death is comparable to Chicago's murder rates. I am deeply involved in the city's racial equity efforts, and I'm telling you all, there is a need for culturally specific and racially relevant peer-based recovery program. Similar to a Rocky Balboa story, the comeback is always better than the setback. I speak for the children of drug addicts. Please help us save our parents. In conclusion, I ask the Reentry Council to support our recommendations to expand treatment options in San Francisco to include abstinence, faith-based treatment programs, and the creation of Black-led, Black-serving treatment programs in San Francisco to meet our cultural needs of our community. Thank you.
Thanks, Jafria. I have Cedric Akbar.
All right. Good morning, everyone. First thing I like to say is accountability, constrained budgets, growing demand for effective services highlight the need for addiction treatment in San Francisco. And since there is a move going through the country at this time, and we really should be the leaders here in San Francisco and in California, of an anti-racist approach when it comes to treatment. Now, when they had the opioid deaths of white people that was happening in the United States, help came immediately, and it was devastating. But to continue to elevate their pain over other races and ethnicities, however, will only worsen health disparities, jeopardizing the lives of people of color. This country and San Francisco require an anti-racist agenda to truly ensure progress and improve health outcomes for everyone. Three principles and policies that San Francisco and this board should take on are that Black voices cannot be excluded from the drug epidemic narrative. Two, Black leaders and organizations must be involved in all stages of public health policy, development, and implementation. And health programs must meet the needs of Black communities, including removing current and historic barriers to health. Now, Steve has some recommendations, and I have some more recommendations that should happen. expanded access to addiction treatment in Black communities and other historically oppressed groups, increased funding for treatment and wraparound services for all substance abuse use disorders, racial impact statements for drug addiction. And when I'm saying drug addiction treatment, I don't mean 3 months. I mean 1 to 2 years of funded services, prevention and enforcement policy. Also, increase opportunities for faith-based organizations to provide prevention services and treatment, which is very important in African-American communities. In addition to all of those things, culturally competent substance use disorder services and treatment programs and an anti-racist framework to specifically address the needs of people of color seeking services within a health system and society where structural racism exists. The other thing is that is real important here in San Francisco. If we're going to work all together, we also have to, in some ways, include law enforcement. And in San Francisco, we've been very unique in having the San Francisco Sheriff's Department to assist inside the jail to help the people start from inside and working their way out. And I think it's very important to continue to fund their programs also. And I want to leave you with this. I had a friend of mine used to tell me this, but he don't want to say his name. He said, any strategy that doesn't see people of color as essential to the fight also guarantees that even when there is a win, people of color continue to lose. Thank you.
Thank you, Cedric. We have Craig Johnson.
All right, that's going to be a hard act to follow, but I'm going to come right behind him because my thing is that we need treatment on demand restored. I'm requesting that funding be made available for Black-led abstinence-based programs in the Bayview and in San Francisco. We want to create other treatment modalities that can coexist with what's already going on. We need to get back to basics. Too many ODs, too many people of color on drugs with no treatment available. Just read the paper. 35% of people being affected are Black and people of color. We need treatment on demand, and we need programs out here that will address their needs. We need to be back to more being more culturally sensitive. We need to get back to some of the old school 12-step, faith-based, abstinence-based drug programs in San Francisco, which don't exist anymore. I mean, and we need to really, really think about how we are going to address this homeless situation, because 90% of the people that are homeless are on drugs. And how are we gonna stop them from being homeless if we don't get them off drugs? So somebody gotta do something. We're trying to house them, but we're not trying to treat them. There's something wrong with this picture. And we need to really take a step up and figure out how we can make something happen that's effective. Thank you.
Next is Jerry Switson.
Good morning. Me being born and raised here in the Bayview my whole life, when I got out of prison in 2010, I was shipped off to a treatment center over on Treasure Island, where all of my counselors were young, 20-year-old white women who had never had an addiction before and, you know, had just went to school. My particular counselor was a former swim coach, and I didn't really relate to her. However, being that I had an opportunity to be there for 14 months, I did get some things out of the program, and I was able to leave there and stay clean for some time. But the thing is, when we're shipped off and we don't have programs in our own communities, eventually I fell on my face because I didn't know how to live in my own community. I didn't know how to be clean in my own community. So I think it's really important that we bring back long-term programs in the communities that we live and work in still, so that people can see you know, people that look like them, that act like them. Many of the people around me who I'm able to serve today know me from a lifetime ago, so that they know that, you know, it is possible to actually be clean and get clean and stay clean. So I think that we need to not only expand the different types of treatments that we have, how long a person can stay in treatment, because as of right now, you get 2 or 3 months, they force you to start working, and people think that just going to work and having a job is being in recovery, and it's not. So just expanding, you know, what treatment looks like and where the treatment is coming from, so that people can see, you know, people that they know actually that's doing the work and living the work. So my recommendation is that we have all of these different options and we bring them to the communities that we still live and work in. Thank you.
Next, we have Rico Hamilton.
Hello, everyone of the council. My name is Rico Hamilton. I am the coordinator for the San Francisco Street Violence Intervention Program, former reentry council member, also a recovering addict of 17 years. I'm calling in response to recommendations in reimagining how treatment looks in San Francisco. We deal with many clients and we tell our clients that we are going to meet them where they are. And in meeting them where they are, if we're not expanding drug and alcohol treatment options in San Francisco, we are actually not giving them or meeting them where they are. We are meeting them where we want them to be. And it is not a part of the harm reduction model. Harm reduction is to meet people where they are. And if they're not a plethora of models that can fit the individual, we are doing them a disjustice and a disharm and doing harm. Another recommendation is to expand drug treatment stays. We know that as former addicts, that it took many years for us to cause the harm that we caused to ourselves and many of the traumas that was caused to us. And it doesn't take 3 months, 90 days to unpack a lot of those harms. Also, I'm advocating for funds for Black-led abstinence-based programs. We know in the climate that we're in with the racial injustices and the systemic racism that happened within our communities, we believe that it is imperative that we have culturally competent programming for our African-American community and communities of color to make sure that they're getting the proper treatment that they need. Thank you.
Thank you. Alicia Clark?
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. I am asking also that treatment stays be expanded. I think it was Jairus who mentioned the 90 days and then people want to move on and get jobs and feel like they're well. And as all of us know, as providers and those in recovery, that 90 days is truly not enough time, nor is 6 months. I agree with 1 year to 2 years in treatment because it seems that people that are staying that length of time usually can maintain sobriety. I am a person that works in the field that also has 24 years of sobriety, and had it not been for abstinence-based programs, I know that myself and many of my colleagues wouldn't be here today. And I just think it's imperative that we have abstinence-based treatment programs, and especially programs that are culturally sensitive and competent for the needs of us, African Americans, that will provide access to housing, financing, jobs. Those like myself who've had serious addiction to substance, the surest way to keep from repeating past behaviors is through abstinence and working with people who have been through some of the things that I've been through, who've been where I've been. Yeah, it helps us keep from repeating those behaviors. Thank you.
Adrian Maldonado.
Good morning. My name is Adrian Maldonado. I am a recovering addict.
In January, God willing, I will have 21 years clean and sober. I was a heroin addict for 17 years, a drug addict for 25. I am also the program manager for the Choices Program in the San Mateo County Jail, part of Correctional Health Services, part of the Health Department of San Mateo County. I want to thank the committee for doing this really hard work and being thoughtful, inclusive, and depthful in approaching this. I agree. I think that all of the requests that the committee are making are reasonable, effective, and in urgent need. And I really want to encourage the Recovery Council to support this, because I heard somebody mention earlier that if their father were trying to get clean now, it might be difficult. And I have to tell you, I sometimes have that thought when I pondering this, that if I were shooting dope today, I don't know that I could get clean. I might have a really hard time, because I was the type of person that needed a real structure and a safe space for a longer period of time to get my life together. Steve has been a longtime friend of mine. He is a colleague. There are others on this call that I also know. I do want to encourage a Black-led absence-based recovery. I think Cedric referencing anti-racism and anti-racist framework and systemic questions around addiction is crucial. And that pro-social justice framework is an important part of recognizing the need to have a Black-led abstinence-based recovery in San Francisco, and having addicts involved in discussions around policy, people who have a lived experience, not only in addiction, but in recovery. I want to thank again this committee. I want to shout out to Rexanne, who's done an amazing job facilitating for us and preparing some of us. And I want to thank you all again. I think this is crucial work. In San Mateo County, we see some of the same issues around treatment. It's a very, very difficult environment now. And I am hoping that this joint endeavor and this collaborative approach and this out-of-the-box thinking, as Craig referenced, kind of going back to some things we know, but being able to coexist with what's current now, is an important step. And I hope the council will move forward with this. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Now we have Tom Wolf.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, members of the Reentry Council. I just want to thank Steve Adami for giving me an opportunity to speak this morning. I am a formerly homeless, recovering heroin addict, San Francisco native. I got clean in a 6-month inpatient program here in San Francisco. We have a drug crisis in San Francisco. Through August, 468 people have died of drug overdose. Unfortunately, almost 30% of those are of the unhoused residents here in San Francisco that have died of drug overdose. By the end of this year, there will be somewhere between 700 to 800 people that have died of drug overdose here in San Francisco. Today, you have an opportunity to support the expansion and promotion of drug treatment in San Francisco. Today, you have an opportunity to support treatment models ranging from harm reduction to 12-step abstinence in San Francisco. Today, you have an opportunity to support lowering thresholds for treatment. Today, you have an opportunity to support communities of color through support of the funding of a Black-led abstinence-based program in the Bayview. Today, you have an opportunity to support extending drug and alcohol treatment stays. Today, you have an opportunity to support recovery in San Francisco. And what is reentry, really? Reentry is recovery. This is your opportunity. This is the time that you have to step forward and say, we are going to take these recommendations and push them forward and make real change in San Francisco. Thank you.
Next is Jabari Jackson.
Good afternoon, fellow council members. My name is Jabari Jackson, and I'm formerly a homeless, drug-addicted felon who was proud and honored to say that I'm a grateful recovering addict today. I appreciate the support and efforts this city has taken towards addictions and recovery, for I am a product and a survivor of both of these very situations that we're talking about. but as statistics shows that we need to implement additional avenues to our strategy. Avenues such as 12-step, faith-based, social model, residential abstinence, and mental health are some of the avenues that will be helpful in these situations. By expanding our treatment options, it will be great in helping, allowing, and inspiring people to guide their recovery. By extending their stays in treatment, will also give them the proper amount of time to build their recovery. It is also time for us to start meeting the needs of recovery of all trapped in this vicious cycle. So starting treatment for the needs of Black people and people of color in the baby was a great step in starting the work of the needs in all of our communities. You know, I was blessed and fortunate by many great people to have the opportunity to find recovery. And they gave me a second chance at a first-class lifestyle. But these are the steps that's needed to give the other people and the future the same opportunity that myself and many people on this call, panel and council, has had. So today's the first step, and please join with us all in making this right. Thank you.
Tracy Watson.
Hello. Hi, my name is Tracy Watson, and I am a recovering addict of 10 years. And I got here by the grace of God, I want to say. And it certainly wasn't by meeting people where they are. I was born and raised here in San Francisco, and I work very closely with the homeless community and as well a founder of a nonprofit here in San Francisco that supports women. And I want to tag along with the previous speakers. It's very challenging working with the homeless community today and also those that are seeking recovery. I find it very challenging because of a lack of treatment today in San Francisco. I know years ago when I first started my journey in recovery, which was with Walden House, there was no meeting people where they were. There was no a limited time of being in recovery. There were, it was 6 months to 2 year programs. One of the challenges again, and I keep saying challenges because it is challenging working with our community today and those that are seeking recovery. I think that the city should expand on treatment options here in San Francisco and really get rid of the Medi-Cal 1690. It's not long enough, not nearly long enough, because 3 months there's really still detoxing. And also more Black-led African-American treatment facilities throughout the city. I actually got clean through a treatment program in Baby U Positive Directions Equals Change. And I got clean because they actually helped me accountable. And even today, I am still a part of that organization. And there's actually on the Friday night groups, I've seen up to 80 people in our group in-person meetings. And that's, it's a reason why people were showing up there. And I want to say it's because, you know, we ask the right questions. We hold them accountable. And I would like to see that throughout the city. Also more women's programs. There used to be so much more women programs throughout the city. They've gotten rid of a lot of women's treatment programs. And also today, there are so many young African-American adults in the city of San Francisco that are walking the streets. And because of this harm reduction model, it's really interfering with individuals trying to change their lives, get clean, and seek recovery. And that's, my opinion, is why homelessness is so visible, why active addiction is so visible, because of this harm reduction model. And I advocate very, very strongly for those seeking recovery today. And Yeah, that's it. Thank you, Steve, for those statistics. And thank you, those who spoke before me. And I really hope to see a change moving forward throughout our San Francisco community.
Thank you, Tracy. Let me interject here for a minute, Rexanne. There's about 9 more people on Rex's list, and we want to hear from everybody. Can people please keep their presentation to a minute or less? Thank you. Go ahead, Rex.
Thank you, Victoria. We have Lisa Wood.
Good morning, all. My name is Lisa Wood, and I'm glad to say that I have been in recovery for almost nearly 17 years, January 23rd. And it didn't come by way of a 90-day program. I actually was in treatment 5 years and 10 months. I'm an alumni of Delancey Street. I'm very proud to be that, and which is an abstinent-based behavior modification program. And then after that, I fell into the good hands of Positive Directions Equals Change here in the Bayview. I work here in the Bayview. I live in the Bayview, and I see the struggles of our community. And we have to understand that I was a junkie for 25 years. It will not allow, you can't undo 25 years of addiction in 90 days. We really have to reprogram the way we think, the way we look at things. So to be able to have a African-American Black organization here in the Bayview have a treatment program would be, man, it would be historical, because I see what goes on here every day. I walk through it every day, and it is desperately needed. So I truly believe that we need to extend time in treatment to a minimum of 90 days to a year. And I do believe that we can reach people like us if we have something close that we can actually present to them to help them see, because they see us, and hopefully we can get them to see themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Next we have Alexandra Kennedy.
Hi. My name is Alexandra, and let's try to do this in under a minute. So I'm in graduate school at Stanford University in the School of Medicine. I'm getting a master's degree in community health and prevention research. My life was not always great. I was not always successful. I was an addict for 9 years, almost 10 years. It got really bad, being an addict up in San Francisco and San Mateo counties. I was homeless, missing teeth, going crazy, et cetera. I want to just say that I think it's great that San Francisco funds harm reduction recovery programs, and I think it's bad that San Francisco does not fund abstinence-based programs, for example, or anything else. I think it's really important that we meet people where they are. Case in point, I don't know if you guys can see this. Okay, this was me before drugs, 17 years old. This is me during drugs. I couldn't smile because I had meth mouth, okay? I think I had like 5 teeth left. Okay, this girl was not a criminal. This girl believed that stealing things was wrong. This girl would never hurt anybody or hurt herself. And this girl, for example, if this girl, me before drugs, were to ever encounter a pregnant woman who wanted to get high, for example, I would have tried to help her, did anything I could to help her not use and go find treatment. Me on drugs, suddenly receiving stolen property, didn't think anything of it. Me on drugs, I would hurt myself every day by poisoning myself, and I hurt other people all the time. And me on drugs, I did encounter a pregnant woman who wanted to get high. And instead of helping them, what I did was I sold drugs to them. And I have to live with that for the rest of my life, trying not to cry. Okay. My point to you about all of this is that this girl needed abstinence-based treatment. If this girl went to rehab and somebody was getting high in the next room or was allowed to be medicated to the point where they were like nodding off, I would have relapsed. I have 9 years clean as of a couple months ago, and I'm at Stanford. My son is healthy and clean, and I'm self-sufficient now, not on welfare, anything like that anymore. And I just want to say that I think that me on drugs, I think I represent a huge portion of the population of people who can't get clean in harm reduction models. I needed a 12-step based model. I needed abstinence based. You know, the only reason why I have so much clean time and why I am where I am today is because I was allowed to, I got clean in another county. I got to live there for 6 months, 7 months actually. And I got to straighten my life out and no one in the program was getting high around me. So I think all the recommendations from this committee are meaningful. I think they're thoughtful and they're reasonable and they're effective. So please consider supporting these recommendations and funding them. Thank you.
Thank you. Erica Peters.
Hi, everyone. Sorry it took so long. I couldn't find the unmute button. My name is Eric Daters, and I run the Mentoring and Peer Support Program, or MAPS, through Jail Behavioral Health and Reentry Services. I am a peer. I have a master's degree. I've been a drug and alcohol counselor. I'm a private therapist. I started using drugs when I was 12. At 17, got sober during the war on drugs for a year and 6 weeks, sort of locked away in a program I couldn't get out of. I'm homeless in DC, you know, trying, begging for help and showing up at AA meetings, but having nobody to pay my rent or give me a place to stay. And, you know, work my way out of that, relapse, come to San Francisco where I thought I could be free and accepted. And, you know, that what it led to was multiple arrests that were just sort of come to jail, go out in the middle of the night, good luck getting home. And, you know, really, really scared a lot. So I wanted to make some recommendations. I wish we still had the graphic up because it was so clear. But one of the things I've noticed that's really difficult is this treatment on demand, right? So let's say I get arrested. Instead of saying, okay, you're going to, you know, get sort of dry out in jail and then walk home in the middle of the night, you know, there, it would have been easier if I was getting out and they said, hey, do you want to go somewhere? Or if there are peers, right? So I run a mentoring and peer support program. We work directly with modeling and accessing treatment programs. I saw yesterday one of my clients that needed to go to treatment desperately. He was over at TAP at 1380 Howard. And they said, oh, you're going to have to come back tomorrow to do a 45-minute, you know, level of care intake assessment, and then we'll put it through to see if there are rooms under, you know, the Prop 47 funding. Peers understand this and jump in. You know, and I get on the call, a call, and I say, what beds do you have under what funding, so I can try to figure out what funding that is and get the person in 3 hours so they're not sitting out on the street with a blanket. Right. So one of the things I really want to push for is having treatment on demand. You know, I need you meet, the city meets. The other one is extending treatment stays. We don't, you know, we just say, okay, you're done with treatment. You've done this time, or you've finished your week of detox. Good luck. Goodbye. And, you know, people walk back out with no place to go. So having more sort of SLEs as well, supportive step down programs, are really, really important because there's staff on hand. And the last one, in terms of having, you know, a program in the Bayview that's specific to Black people, I think is fantastic. You know, I'm a counselor. I'm also, you know, a 48-year-old white guy with a master's degree and my own view and a whole different life that I grew up with. And it's really hard, you know, to be someone who models and counsels people when they're looking at me saying, you know, who the hell are you and what do you know about me? So I think it's very important to have culturally appropriate treatment. Thanks for taking time to listen to me.
Thank you, Eric. Council, I apologize. This meeting is going to go over about 15 minutes. There's about 6 or 7 more people for the presentation. Please keep your presentations 60 seconds or less. Go ahead, Rex.
All right. Victoria Westbrook, you're next.
Hi. So you guys know I'm the acting reentry policy planner and the women's gender responsive coordinator. I'm also a meth addict who used drugs for over 20 years and went to federal prison for drug trafficking. I don't really recommend it as a way to get your life together, but getting indicted by the feds worked for me. When I was on pretrial, the feds sent me to a 6-month abstinence-based therapeutic community program. I also did an intensive 9-month program while in prison. After doing drugs for over 20 years, I needed more than 90 days to learn and to heal. I don't think that a program that wasn't abstinence-based would have worked for me. I needed a program that expected me to be clean in treatment and when I was leaving treatment. That helped me regain hope and a belief that I could get clean, live in recovery, and get my life back. My life today is better than I could have ever imagined. And I have this life because somebody gave me the opportunity to recover. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Mike Hoskins.
Thank you, everyone. My name is Michael Hoskins. I'm a formerly incarcerated person. I currently work on the front lines with the people we are specifically talking about. I worked in methadone clinics as well as residential treatment plans and currently stationed in a SIP site. If we expand treatment models, we could get more people into treatment. I'm also in recovery and I hear the cries for the people we're currently serving. They need more options. Currently San Francisco is very limited and it would greatly expand our opportunities to get more people into recovery if this was expanded. Secondly, we definitely need longer stays. 90 days is not near enough time for anybody to get sober, let alone get clear-headed. Thank you.
Thank you. Deborah, it's right here.
Hi, I'm Deborah, and thank you for having me. I've been sober for 21 years, doing this from the jailhouse and still doing it. Coming from the jailhouse to programs and still right now today under Positive Direction, who has been a supporter to me. And smaller programs strive for services throughout the city. And we've been here forever and still doing it with no money. But can you imagine having some money? Or having some funding to make it work, and having the places to put people where don't nobody want to go. You know, we're here, we continuously be here. You know, we work, we have women's programs, we got Solutions for Women, we got Sister Circles, we got all these groups that's here without no funding. And if we was to have more funding and more places to put people, we could still do what we do. Just like I got here, people could still, they still striving to get here. But when they ain't got no places to go, what they do? They go back to where they was comfortable for them. So we're asking, I'm just asking to provide more spaces and places for addicts like me to continue with the process. Let's continue with the process because somebody got to do it. We're here to do it, but you got to let us do it. And thank you.
Next, we have Alan Harbin.
Hello, everyone. My name is Alan Harbin, and I'd just like to say thank you for having me on. As for me, I'm a walking miracle right now. I'm born and raised in San Francisco in the Western Addition, and I was one of those people that used to be in your house, you know, slanging dope, using dope, doing everything possible under the sun to try to hurt myself and hurt others. I'm also a former incarceration, inmate. I've been in and out the penitentiary, in and out of county jails, but somehow, and I even have done programs when I was, when it used to be called Walden House, when it was a program. Today, it's called Health Right 360, will start changing. But yeah, we do need longer programs and everything like that to help us get to where we at. Today in my life, I had a lot of people in my life to help me on my journey with Positive Direction. Raw Talk, when it was Raw Talk. Men's Mentoring with George Durant and them. And they kept believing in me. And I even had a few deputies inside the county jail that believed in me. One of them was Deputy Bryant, who works in APOD, who kept letting me know that I was worth somebody and I can do this and I don't have to be keep coming in and out of jail or being on drugs. So finally, at age 39, over 4 years, I'm going on 5 years in February, that I just wanted to get my life together. And ever since then, for the past, and having positive wrestling in my life, and even Rico Hamilton in my life has helped me get to where I'm at today. And I works in the field now with NOVA, in the sheriff department, in the probation department. And I'm just happy to be here today. And thank you very much.
Thank you. We have Johnny Robles. Johnny, are you on the call?
Hi, everyone. I'm Johnny Robles. I would like to add to this in conjunction with what everyone else has been sharing. I've been in recovery for 25 plus years. My recovery actually started when I was in custody. And I have to be honest and say that without law enforcement, I wouldn't be the man that I am today, because law enforcement was very huge in helping me in my path of recovery, as well as the 12-step programs. We do need more faith-based recovery programs. We do need more recovery programs that are gonna hold us accountable. Unfortunately, today, we're seeing a lot of programs that are not holding us accountable. Along with our sobriety, I wanna highlight that sobriety is more than just physical abstinence. It's more than just getting off of whatever our substance of choice is. Sobriety involves the spiritual, the mental, the emotional aspect of our life. It's involving all areas of our life where we could grab something of substance and hold on to that and build off of that. Because once we start to build the mindset of, I'm getting in recovery because I need to be right, we start to also take on the mindset of being in recovery to help the next person, kind of a each one teach one. And we start to learn what it is to be a part of a community. And being in the recovery community has helped me expand my mentality, it helped me to expand my vision to being able to accept people where they are, but to also help them where they're at. And I do believe that we need longer stays in treatment program. We do need to have more culturally sensitive treatment programs. We do, along with having programs that are focused and led by cultural leaders, it's also important to be able to reach people within their own language, whether that's being bilingual, whatever language it is, that we could reach the people who need help. We need to do that. And those of us who have received the help along our path, along our journey, this is the time for us to put into practice. For those of you who are familiar with the 12 steps, it's steps 3, 9, and 12. We need to lean on those every day. Thank you for allowing me to speak on this.
Thank you. We have Richard Beal.
Hello, everyone. My name is Richard Beal. Feels good to be in the meeting with recovery, with the Reentry Council. Thank you to everybody that spoke. You know, I guess I'd be called the cleanup man. I know everybody pretty much in the meeting. You know, and it's just been a pleasure to work with you, Sheriff, and the Chief, and Steve, and Destiny, and Victoria. All of y'all have been wonderful. Thank you to everybody that spoke, my colleagues. I want to say, you know, I've been working in this community for over 25 years. You know, I went to my first program. I've been clean for over 25 years. I went to my first program in 1986, Salvation Army, San Francisco. Didn't get clean. That was in 1986. I didn't get clean till 1995. 53 detox episodes at Ozanam, 53. I know because I ended up working there for 5 years and looked at my file. And so since now and then, I need to say the number of treatment programs have dwindled down to, I mean, it's really sad. You know, we used to have Western District Recovery House, Lone Star, Liberation House, 12-Step on the Avenues. I can go on and on about programs that have closed. Western District was, the target population was HIV-positive African-American men. Lone Star, HIV-positive African-American women. Those programs don't exist anymore. We don't have any programs right now where the target population is African-American men and women. There might be some transitional houses that are left, a few. Rafiki House, you know, I know that. in order to a few others. But the residential programs are not existing. We need more treatment options. We need to expand treatment. Definitely 30, 60, 90 days is not enough. Everybody said it. I knew Cedric and Craig for, we worked together for over 25 years. Positive Direction has set a legacy in the Bayview. They need a residential program in the Bayview. And we talk about, I remember when they started the harm reduction movement. When they started the harm reduction movement, we talked about abstinence as the ultimate goal in harm reduction. The ultimate goal in harm reduction when it comes to substance abuse is abstinence. They said staying clean must come first. And so before you can work with somebody and help them move along in their lives, you got to get them clean first. You got to get them clean. That was the understanding when this harm reduction movement started over 20 years ago. And so abstinence and harm reduction, yeah, we meet people where we are, where they are, but we do a disservice if we just leave them there. And that's what we've been doing. What we've been doing ain't been working. It ain't been working. I see more people using, more people on the street, people going in and out of jail. I'm working it. I mean, it's been sad. You know, so we need to fund more residential treatment. We need more treatment options. We definitely need a residential program in the Bayview. Positive Direction has set a legacy in the Bayview and the foundation for over 25 years. Already done. Already, the work has already been done. You know, and so I'm just saying, you know, thank you, Steve. Thank you, Destiny, for everybody. You know, Craig, Cedric, you already know. We've been on this battlefield for over 25 years. I'm going to continue on the battlefield because I believe in what we do, and that is serving the community. Meeting people where we are, where they are, but once again, we do a disservice if we just leave them there. Thank y'all for listening.
Thank you so much for everybody that shared. Sheriff Miyamoto, back to you.
Thanks, Victoria, and thank you, everybody. I know people have been mentioning some things on chat also. I ask and encourage all of you to take a look, too, if you're we're watching these powerful messages being shared, and there's also people on our chat that are sharing things as well, and people that have had to drop off. So thank you for everyone. For your patience and your time and your sharing. That's what this is all about. Is there any council member at this time that would like to make a motion to support the Recovery Summit Working Group's recommendations?
I'd like to make a recommendation to support.
I wanted to say something, but I don't know if this is the right time or if we're out of time.
We do have other hands raised, so.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
And I think after the motion and the second, I think we reserve time for comment as well, Nona. So,
okay.
I think I heard Jabari say that he wanted to motion.
I like to support the motion. Great men, great women, great team. Let's jump into this battle. I support it.
Thank you, Jabari. Do I hear a second?
I'll second it for
Thank
sure.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you. And Victoria, if I'm correct, do we open it up for comment now?
Yes, the council and the public can comment if there is public comment. First council members, please. Karen, would you like to speak?
Yes, thank you. So first and foremost, I just want to thank everyone who brought forward their stories with courage and grace and shared their experiences. Thank you all so very, very much. We appreciate so much your sharing your war on this situation and doing all that you're doing and holding on to your clean time and your sober time and holding on with both hands. I appreciate you. Me personally, this is very moving for me because right now, as we speak, I have a brother who lost his job during COVID and now he's on the corner. So in the Bronx. And so I understand what's going on. And I just want to say that there really and truly is a sense of urgency because a lot of people are losing hold of those things that's been holding them up and keeping them steady during this COVID crisis. And so we really do need these services. So I just encourage the council to really support this. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Supervisor Fuhrer.
Yes, thank you very much. I also wanted to state that thank you so much for this presentation. I think it was so educational, but also I think it should have a wider audience than just the Reentry Council. I actually think this should go before the hearing of the Board of Supervisors as they start to set direction and also to spend funds. I also wanted to ask whether or not there's been any discussion about employment and job training in addition to these recommendations. Mm. I think that if we're looking at long-term recovery, I think that what we're looking at as, you know, just speaking as somebody who has had friends who actually 20 years heroin and was in recovery, but how important a job was and job training was to get back into and to have purpose, but also integrate a society and also spending, you know, she used to say to me that doing heroin for 20 years, you know, I had to be at a certain place at 6:30 in the morning, and I was there at 6:30 in the morning, and I was another place at 4 o'clock. It took up my whole day to do drugs and buy drugs. And so to start a whole nother lifestyle and also just, I think, repurposing sort of what your skills back into the mainstream, being self-sufficient, all these things. I'm just wondering if the package of what we would include would also be a pathway to employment, whether it be job training, with housing, those type of incentives to actually stay in recovery and be successful.
Thank you, Supervisor Fuhrer. Angelica Almeida, would you like to speak?
Yes, thank you so much. I first want to say thank you for everyone who spoke and presented, and congratulations to all of you on your recovery. And Chief Fletcher just said this, it truly was a phenomenal presentation. So I really appreciate that. And Karen, I really also appreciate you highlighting the impact of COVID that overlays all of this. It makes a complex issue even more complicated in what we're able to move forward. A great example is the drug sobering center that was set to open that wasn't able to because of COVID precautions. And it just makes it so difficult during this time, and is also really impacted the increase of overdoses because people are using in isolation, and it makes it complicated to do reversals, et cetera. And so I appreciate you saying that. And Supervisor Fuhrer, I was going to mention this also, so appreciate you bringing up this being a really good time because we have Mental Health SF and Prop C funding that can help fund some creative programs that aren't hamstringed by Medi-Cal, which is always a challenge that we've had as a department, and really encourage everyone not just to be part of those conversations, but also to address those challenges at the state level, because I think these are the voices that the state needs to hear of why there are those caps on and limitations around stays and treatment. I appreciate the conversation around recovery being different for everyone. And I think one of the speakers brought this up, and I apologize, I don't remember who said this, but abstinence is absolutely part of the harm reduction continuum. And I think that gets lost a lot in the conversation. One of the things that I was excited to hear about, and I know the council is familiar with our Prop 47 funding, but in just some of the things that I'm hearing about in terms of the transitional age youth and the peer support and abstinence-based and faith-based programs, this is really what drove us to apply to contract with Salvation Army to provide those services for people who have criminal justice experience. So I appreciate all of that, and it certainly is not enough, but I think that that always needs to be part of the continuum because that often gets lost, as I said. The other thing I was just going to say related to Mental Health SF and specifically the transitional age youth support is that is a special call out and providing some an investment and services for that age group. It is completely important and as we've talked about, developmentally different and certainly needed. And the one thing I would say in terms of the stays in treatment, and not only does that need to be addressed, and I think I heard this said, but it's really about the continuum of residential treatment, but also some place for people to go. Going to residential treatment and then going back into the community frequently doesn't work for individuals. So how we have options for people to go into residential treatment, step down to sober living environments, and Supervisor Fuhrer, as you said, job training programs and other opportunities, and really focusing on those principles of recovery and wellness and meeting individuals and working, supporting their whole person. And I already mentioned around the safe consumption sites and the impact of COVID, and that's just made things really complicated for us to move forward some of our other more creative plans, but I really look forward to supporting this. And I had mentioned this to Victoria, but I'm hoping to share a recording of this meeting with our substance use disorder system of care, because I think it's, I could share this information, but I think it's so much more valuable and impactful for them to hear from all of you. So I appreciate that we're meeting in a forum like this, as unfortunate as it is not to be in the room with you, but that we have options to share in a different way. So I thank you again for everyone.
Thank you, Angelica. Deidre, would you like to speak next?
Yes, this is Deidre Black, Deputy Director for Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. Thank you, guys. I've just recently kind of started sitting in on these meetings, so I don't get to talk a lot, just kind of listening. But I wanted to thank our people with lived experience for bringing some of these things to the forefront. I knew to me a very strange way that they do things. I've been working in this field for almost 2 decades, specializing in the criminal justice population, maximum security. I've ran drug courts. I've had to redo curriculum specifically geared toward cultural competency and for women. And I think as we talk about these different suggestions, we need to consider every component that a person will need to not just get clean, but stay clean. So let us not forget about the housing component. Let us not forget about connecting people to primary care doctors. Let us not forget about the education piece. And also, I would push forward that one of the issues that I find is that even with employees who are suffering from racial trauma, EAP is not really an adequate solution for them, because most of your counselors are going to be white. And so I would suggest, make a suggestion that maybe in the future that we put aside some funding to provide certification training for people with lived experience to become certified substance abuse counselors, to be able to get these jobs, work in their communities. That's kind of killing two birds with one stone. You want people with lived experience, but you also want them to gain the benefits of being actually certified. So I would make a suggestion that we also put up into some money to where we can start a cohort. We can do it as a pilot to get a group of individuals who've been clean to go through substance abuse certification training to actually add that to their resume and their marketability as well. And thank you guys for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Norma Reese.
Hi, everyone. Thank you to all who shared. I'm going to try to keep this brief. Thank you, Steve. Thank you to the Recovery Working Summit group and everyone who shared their experiences and recommendation. I myself, I'm a part of the Reentry Council, but I'm speaking from life experience. I'm here. I'm a heroin addict who has been clean from heroin for 6 years this month. I say I am because drug addiction is a lifelong fatal disease. It will never go away. And I have to struggle with this for the rest of my life. Most of the time I was forced to get clean, meaning I was thrown in age 50. And so it gave me the time to heal. It gave me the opportunity to get clean. I've been to several treatment programs, including adolescent treatment programs, Walden House. Cedric was actually working there when I was there at 240 Haight Street. Latino Commission, Jelani House, Pomeroy House, detox, Ozanam based programs, 12-step programs, medically assisted treatment programs, church, God. I mean, I tried it all. And I think that there's no one tailored approach, which everyone has said here. We all know that. And for me, it was a number of things. It was really hard trying to find a treatment bed. One time when I was using, I found out I was pregnant. And it took me 4 months to get into treatment. I finally got into treatment. I went to Jelani House and they didn't properly search my bag. So when they finally did, they found, I guess, paraphernalia in it, and they kicked me out. I was pregnant. I was 4 months pregnant. They left me on the street. I cried so hard. I did not want to go back to the street. I did not want to use. But I had no choice. Where did I go? I went directly to the Mission, to 60th Street, to one of those hotels, and stayed there for, I was pregnant using. And I wanted to get clean so bad. I finally got clean. I do want to say that it's very important that we expand treatment length. And all those recommendations are great. And I do agree with Board of Supervisors, Senator Alicia, that we must bring this to a greater
platform, you know, such as the Board of Supervisors. And I would be happy to for that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Ruiz.
Hope that was fast.
Jackson.
Yeah, once again, I'm grateful for this opportunity and these people that came together to present this issue amongst the council. You know, for being in recovery and being an addict, you know, this possibility of expanding the options of recovery is awesome. I mean, I have goosebumps and my stomach is excited. Because if it wasn't for recovery, I wouldn't be where I am right now. If it wasn't for recovery, I'll be dead or in prison for the rest of my life. If it wasn't for the strong people of recovery, I wouldn't be able to be sitting in front of you guys today. You know, I'm just honored and I'm truly ecstatic and happy and excited for the possibilities of all this moving forward. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you, Jabari. Aaron Burris from the public wanted to speak.
Yeah, I'm a recovering addict. I've been in recovery for going on 18 years. When I paroled from prison, I went through HealthRight 360 at Walden House. And just the difference in the last 5 years of treatment in San Francisco, the way programs operate, I'm very familiar with it. We're talking about the length of treatment right now is a Band-Aid on an artery. That in order for treatment to move forward, there needs to be time to heal and space and focus on the issue that I used in the first place. Treatment shouldn't be based on a 2-day detox, 2-week detox, fill me full of substance abuse recovery information and think that my rational will is going to go, I don't want to suffer again. I'm dealing with a disease 16 years later, 18 years. I was shooting heroin at 14. The length that I had to go through and the things that I had to resolve to get clean taught me that my substance abuse was a symptom of what was wrong in my life. And once I dealt with those issues in my life and I had the time and space to get clean and sober, I did. And that's what's needed. That's what's needed, in my opinion. And I agree with every recommendation that was put forth on the slide presentation. And the way through this is not to try to parcel out treatment options, but to give people time and space and support them. And that's where the results will come through, the lasting sobriety. And that's what I have. And thank you for hearing me.
Next, we have Alex Weil.
Hi, this is Alex Weil. I'm the director of the CASC and the probation team at UCSF. I really appreciate all the insight everyone's offered to this conversation. I don't want to just repeat what everyone else has said. There's been so many good ideas, but you know, I will say that I've been working in the mental health / substance abuse field for the past 15 years. I worked in residential treatment for 7 years before this current job. And you know, I've seen clients cycling through the system time after time. And that's the way the city has addressed clients' needs, just on a very short-term basis. And that's true at all levels of the system, whether it's psychiatric emergency services or residential treatment. Clients need longer stays. They need however many stays it's going to take for them to get the treatment that they need. We don't know when a client is going to be ready to get clean and sober. So, you know, whether a client's been through a program 2 times or 10 times in a year, I think we should allow however many times it takes. And we also need programs, like everyone said, that meet the spectrum of needs that clients present with. And, you know, that aren't restricted by, you know, whether a client is having psychiatric issues. So I also think we need to be looking at the mental health component to this conversation and make sure that, you know, we're creating programs, substance abuse programs that are also equipped to handle clients with mental health needs, because I feel like a lot of clients that we're working with at the CASC are having doors shut on them because they have mental health needs, but you know, the mental health programs don't feel that they're appropriate because they have substance abuse issues, and the substance abuse programs are saying the same thing. So I think that's something that needs to also be talked about. So anyways, thanks everybody, and I appreciate being part of the conversation.
Thank you so much, Alex. So there's no more hands up or anybody that wants to speak. Back to you, Sheriff, for a vote.
Thank you again for everyone's.
I do see one more hand.
Is there another hand up?
Yeah,
Philip.
Philip, you have like 30 seconds.
Yeah, I just want to be quick. I was supposed to be part of the presentation today, but unfortunately, I have a lot of different stuff going on. I am also someone who's sober, and I've worked in the mental health, a substance abuse field for the last 3 years in combination with a role that involves clients who are in the criminal justice system. I was an addict and a homeless person with mental health issues, and I've traveled through the Tay youth system, and I got sober while in the Tay youth system, and I have stayed sober ever since. So I just want to speak in support of everything going on. You know, I want to see my peers who are on the streets with me and who are young getting better, not continuing to decline. And I think everything that has been talked about in combination with the work that we're all doing will continue to impact those people who need it most. So that's all I got, and thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Sheriff, now we can vote.
Okay, Destiny, can you please go through the roster and give one opportunity?
Chief Karen Fletcher?
Absolutely, yes.
Tara Anderson?
Aye.
Paul Miyamoto?
Aye.
Tony Castellano?
Tony had to step away for a meeting. This is Amy Reiser. I believe federal probation abstains from a vote.
No, I don't know that. I don't think, believe so, but Angelica Alameda. We'll figure it out.
Aye.
Supervisor Feuer.
Yes.
Deidre Black. Step away. Aspen Marshall.
Aye.
Dan Kelly?
Aye. Sorry, Karen Roy. Deidre, I was on mute. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Karen Roy?
Aye.
Aunt Norma Ruiz?
Aye.
Shania Branner? All right. Michael Brown? Yolanda Morissette?
Aye.
Oscar Salinas?
Aye.
Jabari Jackson?
Aye.
Okay, that concludes the vote.
Okay, the motion passes, and at this time we can move on to agenda item 9, which would be our council member comments, questions, and requests for future agenda items.
And if there aren't, we can move to 10.
I don't see anything. Do you guys see anything?
No.
All right, 10 would be our public comment. I believe it's the time for our public comment on any of today's agenda items or any other business within the purview of the Reentry Council. Is anybody, we'd welcome right now at this time, any comments from members of the public on any item?
I don't see any hands up, Sheriff.
Okay, then I believe we go to 11 at this time, which would be our adjournment.
Okay, so Destiny, can you go through the roster to do the vote for adjournment, please?
Chief Fletcher?
Aye. But I'll second the sheriff's motion for adjournment. I don't think we had a motion.
Thank you.
A second,
thank you so much.
I'll do that before roll call.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tara.
I heard the chief, and then we have Tara Anderson.
Aye.
Tony Castillo?
Aye.
For Tony.
Thank you, Amy. Angelica had to step out. Supervisor Feuer?
Aye.
Deidre Black? Maybe I'll mute again. Aspen Marshall?
Sorry, I'll mute again. Aye. Okay.
Marshall's aye.
Thank you. Dan Kelly? Karen Roy?
Aye.
Norma Ruiz?
Aye.
Shania Branner? On. Michael Brown? No. Yolanda Morissette?
Aye.
Oscar Salinas?
Aye.
And Jabari Jackson?
Aye.
Thank you.
Great. I just want a final say here in terms of just thanking everybody, everyone who's on now, who's been on, everyone from the public. Our next meeting is going to be January 21st, 2021. So we'll all finally be out of 2020 and away from this year. So please make sure you mark your calendars, same time and location, hopefully to be determined outside of these. But if not, we'll get through it. And I want to say, although it has been a long meeting, that the energy from everyone and just what we're doing here, it just should be energizing to all of us as we go forward back to our jobs. And let's just keep it all in our hearts and minds as we move forward on this important work. Thank you, everyone, for being here today.
Thank you so much.
Go Reentry Council.
Thank you. Thank you, Victoria and Destiny.
Thank you, Sheriff.
All right. Y'all have a good day.